that the media didn't really cover, because I went down there and, I mean, I was right kind of in the middle of a lot of that stuff. And the reality is that a lot of the abuses and things that the state had caught, they couldn't put that out to the public because it was, you know, private material with, you know, where it involved minors. And I can't put a lot of that out as well because of that, but, you know, I could put out the things that came out later once the kids got sent back. The stuff that, well, like in the book, it talks about how they found abuse and neglect in 90 families. It was. It absolutely was. It's just that CPS just got hammered by the media. They got hammered by the public thinking that they shouldn't have taken the kids. And they got hammered by the Supreme Court because of the way they took the kids off the ranch. And so they just bailed. I mean, I try to be careful how I say that, but they dropped the cases. They made the parents take some classes, and then they call it good and just dumped them. But I do have people in the book that were involved telling the truth about why they dropped those cases.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There is an interview with one of the attorneys that were working for CPS at the time, Charles Childress, and he's also put some stuff out to the media. I mean, some of this has been out in the media, but it was like little papers, newspapers. I mean, none of it, I don't think, has really gone to national press.
And what did he tell you?
It's in the book, and there's that interview with him, but he went in and he was trying to actually non-suit or drop the cases on every single child that they possibly could because it was just such a big situation to deal with, and then focus in on the abuse cases where children had been sexually assaulted and make sure that those children got the services they needed and the protection that they deserved. And it just turned into a big hairy mess, and everything got dropped except for there was only one child that they actually protected, and that was my stepdaughter. And everybody else went back to parents.
Was that in part because of your involvement, or why was she exceptional?
The reason that she ended up being exceptional was that her mother completely refused to cooperate with CPS. She refused to take classes. She refused to any of the things that they were asking her to do. And so a lot of the mothers, they did ask them to report their address. I mean, it was really fundamental, simple things. They had to go to class. I mean, and so because Barbara refused to do those things, then they took it to court, and then Marianne was removed. And once Marianne was removed, then the judge ordered a home study on Barbara. And the person that went in did the home study said, there's just no way, never, ever should a child be in the same room with this woman, let alone in her care. And I didn't put up that specific in the book, but those are the similar statements of what was made with that study, and so that's why Marianne was never returned to her mother.
It was kind of a coincidence that she actually was related to you.
Somewhat, yeah, it really was. And so, yeah, it really was, because there were other situations with minors that were every bit as egregious as far as the crimes that had been committed against them. But because the mother was willing to work with CPS, she got the child back.
What kind of crimes, just to give me an idea of what's involved? I don't know where the end thing is.
Well, oh, it's endless. But the main thing that I could put out in the book, because it's being proven up in court right now, is the sexual assault of minors.
By the male?
Yes, by a 50-year-old man. There was a man that was just convicted for 33 years, Alan Key, because he sexually assaulted a minor. Oh, yes. Texas is prosecuting right now. There's about 10 men that they're prosecuting for sexually assaulting minors. One of them is getting prosecuted for bigamy. The first individual that got prosecuted was my stepson, Raymond. He was given 10 years for the sexual assault of a minor. And his bad acts that came in were horrific. in that she was in labor for 3 days and he didn't get her medical care because he was afraid of getting caught. So she, well, he's like 30, 38, 37. So I'm 42. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Of course, that's got all the professional makeup and everything, so you have to give it some credit for that.
So is that also a coincidence in that as far as it's related to you?
Well, part of the reason I left or escaped this group, and I mean, my back was against the wall, basically, because Warren was marrying young girls at 14. My oldest daughter was turning 14. He wasn't marrying all girls at 14, but it was happening. And they were keeping it very secretive. People in the community really didn't understand what was going on because he made marriages very, very secretive. But I did because I knew some of what was going on because they were performing these marriages at Merrill's Hotel, my ex-husband's hotel, out in Caliente, Nevada. And keeping it very quiet. So I was hearing things here and there that this was going on, and I knew I couldn't keep my daughter safe if I stayed in that group, and I also, there was other things being said where I suspected that Warren was going to at some point put us into compounds. So I kind of, I saw this coming before I left, and I knew if I tried to leave that they'd take my kids and I'd never see them again. And so my options were I stay in and I can't protect them. And, I mean, they could even end up in a compound where I don't even know where they are and what's going on. So it was a lose-lose situation for me. I mean, the best case scenario was to try to escape. If I could get to the authorities and get some help, there was a possibility I might be able to protect my children. If I stayed in, I knew there was no chance of protecting them. That's the key reason I left. And then I got out in the nick of time. I got out right before they started building that ranch in Texas and all that goofiness started occurring down there. And my ex-husband is right in the middle of that. He's the one in charge of the Yearning for Zion Ranch. And that is why so many of these cases involve my family, because they all ended up down there in the middle of it. And when the state went in and took off the ranch, when they went in and took off the 439 children, then the 8 of those kids were my stepkids that were taken off for abuse. And then,
sorry,
I was just going to say, a lot of those kids that were taken off were Merrill's grandkids. Merrill's my ex-husband. They were his grandkids and his kids and nephews and nieces, and it was like one family in reality, one big, very large extended family. Merrill, when I was with him, he had 7. I think from the last article they put out about Merrill's family in the Life magazine, they photographed 23 women at a funeral for his first wife, Sonina. And the person that was there, that was doing the interview, they told him that those 23 women were all Merrill's wives. And Merrill's first counselor of the church, and he's the bishop. So when Warren went into prison, Merrill inherited the responsibility of being the leader in that group, because first counselor takes over if anything happens to the prophet. Warren went to prison in 2006. He was on the top 10 most wanted list for about 8 to 9 months, I believe. Maybe not quite that long. And then he was caught, and he went to prison in 2006. He was tried in 2007 and found guilty of being an accomplice to rape. So he's been in jail ever since then.
Involved in doing, prosecuting Warren or
and we're not investigating the church until I left. And part of the reason I went to the authorities is they were hunting me down. I escaped in the night with my kids, and then I was hiding in the city in different people's homes. They had men scouring Salt Lake City for me before I even got here, because they knew I was going to Salt Lake. Warren put word out. He was the prophet at the time. You know, pull every man off the construction jobs. Get her found. She's a problem. She's going to cause us problems. I ended up with an interview with the Attorney General of the State of Utah within a few months after I left. And he asked a personal friend of his that was a very good attorney. She had sat on the bench as a commissioner for years in family law. She understood it better than most judges. He asked her to take my case. And so my custody case became high profile. And I was the first woman ever to leave the FLDS, get all of her kids out, and take them on and get legal custody. It absolutely did in a roundabout way, because that's when they started investigating the FLDS. And the investigator that got put on it eventually was taken off because the things he was finding was so traumatizing. And it became overwhelmed quickly with the, every time they turned a rock over, you know, they find one crime, they get into that, there was crime leading everywhere. And it was, there's a lot of people being hurt and a lot of minors, and so I guess that the state of Utah took the approach that if they could put Warren in prison, they could stop the crime. And so they didn't want to go after all the little trunks and trees with the crime. They just thought if they got the big guy that was telling everybody to do the crime, it would stop. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And I tried to tell the state that that wouldn't work. I told them straight up, the problem's the lifestyle. You know, the lifestyle created Warren, and it's created a lot of him. And you take him down, put him in jail, you're going to have a whole bunch of Warren, other little people pop up that are just as bad, that will take over this organization, and it's going to just keep spiraling, and people will keep getting hurt.
And so you said your husband is going to trial.
Yes, he's going to trial in October of 2010 for an illegal marriage. He married my stepdaughter, Mary Ann, to Warren when she was 12 years old.
He performed the marriage.
Okay, so that's what he's on trial for. Right. For performing an illegal marriage of his underage daughter.
How long did he go to prison for?
10 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. It's a third-degree felony, and he will get 10 years. So far, the men that have been convicted, and this is the thing that the national media hasn't picked this up. I mean, it picked up strongly, the kids being taken from parents, but nobody's really covered the reason they were taken from parents now that it's been proven in a court of law or is being proven currently. Like my stepson got 10 years. The next man that was up for trial is Alan Keat, and that trial exposed some of the reasons the kids were taken off the ranch. What came out in his trial is that the state found a lot of military-grade weapons on that ranch. I mean, they found a stash of some very dangerous weapons, and some were the type of guns that you can take down, you can take out a tank with. And they, I think they were very concerned about things getting violent, and when they found the abuse that they were finding with the children, Austin didn't know, they had no idea how many kids were on this ranch, and they gave orders to get them all off, based on what they were finding. And I think they were just deciding on the, they were ruling on the side of caution, get the kids off, let's find out what we're dealing with, and let's just go from there. And then when they get sent that order down, then, you know, I think they thought maybe they'd be removing upwards of 60 kids, and the reality is they removed 439, and the whole thing spiraled into fiasco quickly. I mean, the state wasn't in a condition to take care of that many kids on an emergency removal. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons the Supreme Court ruled that they had to go back, is because they didn't interview 439 children. They interviewed several people. They found several really bad situations, and then they just made a judgment call on that. And so based on that judgment call, the findings were, well, you can't take that many children away from parents when you got to make an individual case on every child. And they didn't do that when the time of removal. So that's why they said they had to go back.
Before I forget, who is Warren convicted of rape?
He hasn't actually been convicted of rape himself yet. However, the state of Texas has two very strong cases of rape. He's going to go to trial in Texas as soon as Arizona is done trying him. And Arizona's trial is in November. And it's similar to Utah's. It's an accomplice to rape. But they've got two other cases in Texas where he will go down as the rapist.
What is he in prison for?
An accomplice to rape. He performed an illegal marriage of an underage bride to a first cousin. And when she complained about being sexually assaulted by this man or her cousin, Warren told her to go be obedient to her husband and supported the man in raping her. And that's why he's in jail.
Okay. So he's in jail right now for a couple.
As an accomplice, yes.
I'm starting to bounce around a little bit, but I wanted to make sure that I don't leave anything out there. I guess I'd wonder.
Yeah. No. The purpose in hunting me down in the beginning wasn't even that I took the kids. It was, I mean, that was part of it. They don't want women. I mean, one of the ways that they can trap women in this society is that we can't get our kids out. If we decide to leave, we have no resources. We have no way to fight for custody. And we can't just say, okay, you know, honey, I don't want to live this way anymore and take the kids. Some polygamous communities are that way. Women do leave and they do take their kids, and it's just, you know, they have those options. The FLDS, they're different in that way. So every woman that had ever left before me that had gotten their kids out, had never gotten them all out. They escaped like I did. They got some of them out, and then they ran. They didn't have the resources to take Groupon for custody, so they would just run. And every time the FLDS hunted them down, they would run again. My son had been diagnosed with an incurable form of cancer at the time I left, and we were fighting the cancer. I'd been in the hospital fighting it for 3 years before I left. He was in critical condition medically. I didn't have the option of running, and that's why I didn't run. Because taking them on, I probably wouldn't have, because it wasn't worth the risk of losing the kids in the system. But with Harrison's conditions, he had to have medical. I couldn't run. And so I think that's one of the reasons I became one of the first women to face him down, because I didn't have an option of running. And so once I won legal custody of my kids, they have no reason to hunt me down. And then the other thing that I did right from the beginning, because they wanted to get me back, is that I did as much damage to them as I could with the authorities. I told the authorities everything I knew. I put as much in writing as I could put in writing, because I knew the more damage I did, the safer I would be, because they had nothing to gain by getting me back.
So you're not even worried about, I mean, a revenge type situation?
You know, I have a security system on my home. And I don't want to be stupid. Of course, there could be revenge. But at this point, they have nothing to gain from it. I mean, other than just, you know, maybe vindicating a situation, which, I mean, I wouldn't put it past them by any means. But at the same time, where I was really at danger was when they wanted the kids back. And when they were concerned about, well, that I had a big mouth and I was talking.
Right. But I guess since we've kind of thoroughly covered the case and whatnot,
mean, I knew most of those women personally. It was tragic to me because when I left, they weren't talking that way. A lot of things, I think, got pretty bad after I got out. And it was tragic to see, you know, to see how bad it did get. And it was heartbreaking to see the children that had been hurt and the level they'd been hurt. It just, it ripped my heart out. But at the same time, you know, while that whole thing was happening, I just, and since, I mean, there's just not a day I take my kids to school that I'm just not thanking God that I was able to get out of that and protect my children and that I can pick them up at school and we're rebuilding our lives and we have the opportunities that we have. And I think living in this country with freedom, people really take for granted things that they shouldn't. Because I've lived a life where I didn't even know freedom existed. I didn't even know what it was like to get out of bed that day, and know you can make the decisions that day what you're going to do with your time. I mean, there's just those things that, you know, I mean, I don't think I'll ever take for granted. And it's tragic when you see the results of what happens to people's lives when they're in an environment they don't have control over their own lives. And they're literally living in prison, in their own mind, and being controlled in ways that's just improper. And it's incredibly tragic to me that that's happening in the freest country in the world. And there's just not enough being done about it to help these poor people that are imprisoned like this. That's one of the key reasons I'm speaking out. The other thing about the book that I feel like is probably the more powerful part of the book that could be, that's the most beneficial, is the second two-thirds of it, which is the tools I use to get out of this, because they're actually quite broad and I think can apply to people's lives in many ways. Taking on your Goliath, things that are bigger than you, that seem bigger than life. And I think so often we sell out to things we don't need to because we just think we don't have options. And you never really know what your options are if you don't test and find out what they are. And I think that even in companies and things, people sell out. They don't do the right things because they're afraid of getting fired. They're afraid of consequences of what will happen. And I think as a nation, we're paying some big prices for this right now. And so, I mean, some of these are just the tools I use to conquer some of the things in my own personal self that I had sold out to for a lot of years. And just finally got to a point I couldn't continue selling out. Well, I ended up with challenges in my life that made me have to stop just buying into the status quo and selling out. I had to look at reality. I had to look at the consequences I was going to inherit in my own personal life and that my children would inherit if I didn't stop the cycle of abuse. I've tried to broaden the tools I used into other elements that people face in life every day. Some of the common things that I've talked about in the book are like forgiveness. When you're very angry, you're dealing with a lot of emotions, you don't think clearly. And sometimes you really can't see things clearly until you forgive the crimes that people have committed against you. You let go of that anger. And when you let go of that anger, and it's not from a place of eating dirt and saying what they did was okay, it's from a place of letting go of the anger so you can use your energy in a more productive way. The book also covers other areas where we just get stuck and we don't see things clearly. And, you know, how to take a look at that in your own personal life where you're just kind of redoing the same thing over and over and again because you think you don't have options to do it differently when you really do. So there's a lot of different elements that the book covers, and some of them are pretty basic categories. I talk about different books, different people, different tools that I used to get through what I did, and things that helped me see my way through it. But I think that in life we can get stuck in our little bubble. We don't want to look past it because we want the safety of that bubble. And in reality, it may be one of the most unsafe places to be. No, no. I'd make jokes, I guess, about that one. I've been asked, you know, do you believe in God and all of that? And I'm like, you know, if I didn't believe in God before I left, I definitely do now. Because, it's, you know, I do look at everything that's happened in my life as such a miracle. I mean, from the ability to just take my kids to school and know that they're safe. But I'm not Mormon. I wasn't really raised Mormon, and that's the other element here, is that the Mormon Church is so different from the fundamentalist movement that they're hardly even similar. People get stuck on that, and they get thinking that it's pretty similar and the same, but it's really not. I did at one point take my kids to the Mormon Church, and I just felt like I was in a foreign country. There was like almost zero similarities. I mean, other than the Book of Mormon, but the interpretation I grew up with was so opposite and different from what the actual Mormon Church interprets that book to be, that it was just mind-boggling and very confusing. It was not a religion that was something I could ground with at all. The Mormons are quite strict about coffee and alcohol. Many of the leading people in the FLDS were alcoholics. We had alcohol in our homes. We drank alcohol. It was a common part of life. We drank coffee. And coffee was not a taboo thing in that religion ever that I remember of. So those elements were foreign to me. I was raised with that. I didn't understand where, if it's not in moderation, why it should be a bad thing. And so I'm not Mormon. I have no desire to be Mormon. I don't have anything against that religion or any other organized religion. I just haven't really had a desire to be a part of anything organized. And, you know, I've heard a joke before, and I agree with it, that people that go to church are afraid of hell. People that are spiritual have been through hell. Yeah, and I do see myself as a spiritual person, but I just don't have any desire to fear God or to fear the afterlife if there is one. Or, you know, I just feel like live my life as good as I can and do what I believe is right, and if there's something after this, we'll take care of itself. Well, thank you. Thank you for your interest.